This episode of Food for Thought is brought to you by the listeners of this podcast, including newest superstar supporter, Lilith Jones, who wrote, "Hi, Colleen, thank you for all you do and have been doing for years for animals and the way you do it. I'm so grateful to be able to support your wonderful work in some measure. Wishing you and yours a most beautiful, fulfilling, and successful 2023. Thank you so much, Lilith. And thank you to new besties, Amy Broadstone and Amanda Jane Allred. I fear I didn't acknowledge them back when they each became a bestie. Thank you both so much. And thanks to everyone who supports this podcast, which you can do at joyfulvegan.com by clicking on the donate button. Today's episode is The Burden of Burros and the Plight of Donkeys. Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. I'm your host. My work is dedicated to empowering people to live according to their own values of compassion and wellness. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, joyfulvegan.com. Hi, everyone. I hope you're doing fabulously well. So, you know, sometimes to keep up with the weekly part of this weekly podcast, the weekly aspect, I will often rebroadcast previous episodes so you have something to listen to or re-listen to while I'm working on new episodes. Well, for reasons that will become clear to you at the end of this episode, I decided to re-release this episode about donkeys, burros. Burros sounds so, it's just so anglicized. But first I took a listen and a look at the transcript from 10 years ago, and I realized there are some things that are out of date. As much as I try to keep my episodes from having things in there that will date them, 17 years in, and yes, this is the 17th year of the Food for Thought podcast, there's bound to be outdated information or references. And in this case, there were quite a few, including my mention of MySpace. I'm not kidding. I mentioned MySpace in the first recording of this episode. So I decided not to, you know, try and just butcher the heck out of the episode by actually just editing things out. But actually, I decided to rewrite it and re-edit it and re-record it and reproduce this episode about one of my favorite animals. All of the stats have been updated. The mention of MySpace has been eliminated. And I add some new content that is related to my now second favorite donkey film ever made. So stay tuned, take a listen, and I hope you enjoy. Today, I want to talk to you about an animal who has, over the centuries, gone from exalted to vilified in terms of human perception and representation. An animal I don't think many people have met, but one who has been much maligned and humiliated on film, in literature, and in our language. An animal who is affected by the daily choices we make, but who is invisible in many ways. An animal you may never think of, an animal you wouldn't think would be part of the animal agriculture industry. An animal I hope you have the privilege and honor of meeting someday. Those of you who listened to my Grateful for Goats podcast episode may recall I said there were two animals with whom I could sit forever and ever and ever, and they are goats and burros, also known as donkeys. I gotta put cats in there. Donkeys. So one of the reasons I wanted to rewrite this episode was for many reasons, but I also searched on my own website for donkey because I was looking for a reference to this episode and some information, and donkey did not come up because I just put burros in the episode title back when I first recorded this episode. So that's one of the reasons why I elongated the title from The Burden of Burros to The Burden of Burros and the Plight of Donkeys, because I'm going to just talk about them as donkeys from now on, but they're referred to as, of course, burros and donkeys and other names as well. So burro is Spanish for donkey, and I will not be referring to them as jackasses or asses, as they have been known to be called, and which has become an insult, meaning stupid or stubborn. There's a reason they were called asses before it was a derogatory term. And that's because donkeys are in the same family as horses. They're cousins of zebras. And the Latin name for them is Equus asinus. Asinus, A-S-I-N-U-S. That's how these animals came to be called asses. And though the wild ancestors of our domestic or feral donkeys were indeed originally called asses in English, and it wasn't derogatory, but now it's so associated with stupidity and foolishness that I do not like using it to refer to donkeys. And just to cap off our etymology lesson, whereas donkeys are of the species Equus asinus, horses are of the Equus caballus, and you may be interested in the horse-related episodes I did very recently on some horse-related words. And as you know, I coined the term animology to refer to our animal-related words and expressions. And so, for instance, you could hear caballus, C-A-B-A-L-L-U-S, that shares the same root as cavalry, which is a military troop on horseback, or cavalier, whose meaning originally referred to a horseman or a soldier or a knight who sits on horseback, but came to refer to someone who's haughty. So we have these words that just refer to a profession or a situation or an animal, the Latin root of, and sometimes they become derogatory, and in this case they did as well. So back to burros, back to donkeys. They are in the same family, burros and donkeys. I keep wanting to say, I'm just going to say donkeys, but I love the word burros, burro. They are in the same family, but they differ from horses. Burros and horses are very different in many ways. Physiologically, they're different. Behaviorally, they're different. One of the most distinguishing characteristics of donkeys is their amazing and amazingly loud voices. Their voices can be heard for almost for over 2 miles. Like, you can hear their voice from 2 miles away. It's how they keep in contact with other donkeys of their herd over what would have been wide spaces of the desert, which is where they originate. And what enables them to hear these brays, a bray is what we call the donkey's cry, the donkey's call, their large ears, of course. They have wonderfully large ears, much larger than horses' ears. And while their ears are soft, if you ever want to touch the softest spot in the world, you can find it on a donkey's nose. It's heaven. It's velvety, pillowy heaven. Okay, mostly velvet. It's just heaven. Touching a donkey's nose. Donkeys are also incredibly intelligent, and I'm not saying this now as a distinction from horses. I'm just saying donkeys are incredibly intelligent. And I think it's one of the reasons, to be honest, they get such a bad rap. I think it's one of the reasons humans get so impatient with them, beat them, strong arm them, dominate them, and just get really, just really intent on just controlling them. And I think it's because of their intelligence, because they are technically a prey animal. They are a prey species, though they really don't have many predators other than humans. So as a prey species, you'd expect them to be a bit meek and a bit more skittish, but they actually tend to be more self-aware than horses because of them being technically prey animals. And they know that they're capable of standing up to most predators. And so for that reason, they're a little less flighty than horses, and they're quieter, even despite their bray, and they're harder to motivate. They're harder to intimidate. So when you're trying to force someone to do something they don't actually want to do, it makes you more frustrated and more determined to make them obey you. So you may beat them and they still don't budge, and so you may beat them more. They may bite you and so you hurt them more. And I think it's one of the reasons donkeys are treated so poorly when they're kept and used for human purposes. Now, I said before that they've gone from exalted to vilified. And when I say exalted, I mean how they were depicted in early literature and in different religions. Donkeys, or more accurately for the time they would have been written about, the time we're referring to, they would have been called wild asses, again, not in a derogatory way. They were the symbol of the Egyptian god Set. The ass, again, not a derogatory term, was a symbol of the Greek god Dionysus. And in the New Testament, Mary is portrayed as riding a donkey when she's pregnant with Jesus, And then Jesus riding a donkey into Jerusalem. So this is a pretty high status for this animal in all of these cases, right? Now, what starts to happen is, first of all, I'm not condoning the use and ownership of animals or the riding of animals, but in the Old Testament, riding a donkey symbolized wealth and affluence, since horses were used only for war. By the time of Jesus's time, riding a donkey was a sign of lack of affluence, a humble life, which is why Francis of Assisi and other saints were often described as riding donkeys. My point is, you'd think donkeys would have been held in high honor, having borne the mother of Jesus on his back, so the story goes, but that's not the case. And by the way, if you want to go visit, and if this is just a segue I have to add, if you are not signed up for our Tuscany trip, I really encourage you to go check it out. We go to Assisi, which I'm not exaggerating when I say it's one of my favorite places in Italy. It's technically in Umbria. It's not in Tuscany, in Toscana, but it is just an incredible place. And we go to St. Francis of Assisi's Basilica, see the place where he's buried. And there are ancient Roman ruins underneath the streets of Assisi. And it was one of the coolest things we saw on our last trip. And we're going to make it part of our tour. It wasn't part of the tour before, but we went last year and we're like, everyone has to see this. This is incredible. It's one of the best exhibits of, you know, kind of understanding the layout of a Roman street relative to the contemporary street that we walk on now. So anyway, go to joyfulvegantrips.com and check out the Tuscany trip. And that was my segue from Assisi. So saints like Francis were considered humble because they were riding donkeys. Now, they would not experience high honor again, not in the Judeo-Christian religion and not in Islam. Muhammad, for instance, said that when dogs or donkeys pass in front of men in prayer, the prayers will be nullified. So not a lot of respect for donkeys there. But they eventually make their way into literature. They don't fare terribly well in literature either, or folklore. The donkey has long been a symbol of ignorance in folklore and literature, all the way from Aesop's fables in the 6th century BC, and a story by Apuleius in the 2nd century AD called The Golden Ass, to Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream in the 17th century, and Carlo Collodi's Pinocchio in the 19th century. Now, of course, we have the lovable Eeyore from A.A. Milne's Winnie the Pooh books, but he's depressed and he's sad and he's pessimistic. And, you know, we just really feel sorry for him. He's not exalted, to be honest. And can't blame him for feeling that way, probably, from all the wrong that's been done to him over the years. So maybe he's quite justified. But those are the depictions of donkeys in literature and religion and folklore, etc. In terms of literature, I wanted to read this email to you I received from a listener named Allison, who shared this with me. And this is one of the advantages of re-recording an episode on the same topic. So Allison wrote to me not long after I had recorded the episode, The Burden of Burroughs. And she said, after listening to your podcast, The Burden of Burroughs, specifically your mention of the donkey that carried Mary, I was reminded of a beautiful picture book about a little donkey titled, actually, The Little Donkey by Gerda Marie Scheidel. This book is not about that donkey being the donkey that bore Mary, though I have encountered others that are, but instead about one who hears about Jesus's birth and wants to go visit him in Bethlehem. His master, again, I'm using the language of the email here and the language that it would have been used, says that it's not true that Jesus is the Messiah. And anyway, why would he condescend to see a donkey if you did go there? But the stubborn, quote unquote, little donkey leaves anyway and eventually reaches Bethlehem and meets Jesus. Though it's obviously very religious, it's just one example of a very positive portrayal. It's at least one example, is what she said, of a very positive portrayal of donkeys. And I love that. And so the idea is that, you know, kind of Jesus welcomed even the most lowly. That's kind of the problem, right? Like, even the most lowly animal Jesus welcomed into his, right? Why are they lowly? Why are they lowly? Why do we consider them lowly? Obviously, so much of that has to do with our own perceptions of them, our own fear of them, our own intimidation of them, and of course, our need to feel exalted ourselves. So anyway, thank you. Thank you, Allison. That was probably about 10 years ago that I got that email, and I Don't know if I responded to you. I hope I did, but thank you so much. And so again, that's The Little Donkey, and you can go find the picture book online. Now, of course, our use of certain words and phrases that have become part of normal everyday speech also denigrates donkeys. It's not uncommon for us to call someone an ass or a jackass or a dumbass, right? Or to say someone's stubborn as a mule or is a stupid ass in our way to insult someone, in a way to insult someone. Less commonly, some of you might be familiar with these insults. Apparently in football in the United Kingdom, a player who's considered unskillful is often dubbed a donkey. Donkey is a term for a bad player in a poker game, particularly someone who plays hands when the odds are against them. And this one was unfamiliar to me, but in the Middle East, a word that means donkey is a derogatory term that refers to someone of very limited intelligence. So I really tried, especially in the rewriting of this episode, to find ways that we praise them in our culture and through our language, and I was hard pressed to. Now, I'm calling this episode The Burden of Burrows, Plight of Donkeys. I'm not calling it The Celebration of Burrows and The Celebration of Donkeys, but I would include it if I had some, but I don't have a lot, which is unfortunate. Now, there's a common word in the English language that came from Spanish that isn't derogatory, but I don't think it praises donkeys either. Frankly, we don't even know why it's, we have no idea what it has to do with donkeys. And most people don't even really detect them hiding in this word. And that's the word burrito. Of course, you know what a burrito is. It's a dish, right? Characterized by wrapping a flour tortilla around some kind of filling, beans, rice, lettuce, avocado, salsa. And the word burrito comes from Spanish for little burro or little donkey. Burrito, that's what the I-T-O signifies, small, right? So a little donkey, a little burro. The earliest reference to the word burrito and to the dish itself is in a Spanish dictionary in 1895. And the entry states that the burrito was popular in Guanajuato, a state in central Mexico. As the dictionary entry is the only hard and fast evidence we have to show where burritos came from, the idea that they originated in Guanajuato seems to be most likely. That was back in 1895 is when it's referenced. The burrito made its way into the United States in the 1900s, and the first mention of a burrito on a U.S. menu was in 1923 at a cafe in Los Angeles, though burritos had most likely been making the rounds prior to that, but that's the first kind of documentation we have of them. And California is still well known for its burritos, especially the Mission Burrito, arguably the most popular style of burrito in the U.S., originating in San Francisco. The Mission Burrito is wrapped in a tortilla, and then it's wrapped again in aluminum foil. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that signifies it. But regarding the word itself, we just don't know how and why it came to be referred to as little donkey. We just don't know. There are different speculations, but it's just uncertain. So anything you hear about why, it's going to be a folk etymology because we just don't know exactly how burritos got their name. We just don't know. But burrito does mean little donkey. And by the way, if you hear that it's because donkey meat was used in the burrito, it's not. No, there's no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that. And though people do eat donkeys, there's no evidence that it's called that because donkey meat was used in these burritos. There's no evidence of that at all. But burrito does mean little donkey. So there you go. There's an etymology, but I'm hard-pressed to conjure any positive etymologies for donkeys. Most people don't even think about donkeys when they hear the word burrito. It's neutral at best, even if they did. It's not a compliment or anything. And it blows my mind because donkeys. I've spent so many hours of my life with donkeys, which is one of the things I am most grateful for in my life at various animal sanctuaries. And I could and did spend just days with them in their magnificence. They have secrets they want to tell you, and they try to tell you, but you have to listen very closely. I really find them to be spiritual animals. I mean, you could say I think every animal is, but I just find something really calming in the presence of donkeys. And that means something to me, especially. Maybe it wouldn't mean as much to you. I have a very high energy, and it's one of the reasons I love living with cats. or hanging out with donkeys because their energy really balances mine versus other animals. I'll just leave it at that. When I'm with donkeys, just being in their presence, I feel like I'm meditating just being in their presence. And they are teachers for me at being still and being powerfully still. There's a strength in their quiet. There's a wisdom in their quiet presence. And I think they're gurus. I think they're philosophers. I think they're misunderstood philosophers. I feel like they watch, they know, they're taking it all in, no doubt about it. Some of them have seen darkness. Some of them have seen the darkest side of humans. They've been beaten, they've been whipped, they've been neglected, they've been used, they've been abandoned, they've been paraded, they've been laughed at, they've been scolded, they've been shoved, they've been kicked. And that breaks my heart, breaks your heart, I know as well. If you listen to the original version of this episode, you would have heard me talk about some of my best donkey friends, especially Waylon and Bonnie. And even since then, since that episode was recorded, again, I have to go back and look at when, way over 10 years ago, I'm sure, Sierra became also a favorite just friend of mine at Farm Sanctuary, where I spent a lot of time. And this was the sanctuary, Farm Sanctuary, up in Northern California in Orland, outside of Chico. And I used to spend a lot of time there. And Bonnie came to the sanctuary when she was 5 years young. I met her in 1999, and I was there the day she died in 2013. She would have been about 20 years old then. She was a tiny little girl. She was not a huge donkey at all. She had a beautiful brown coat, and she was an absolute sweetheart. People fell in love with her. Everyone who met her fell in love with her, as did other donkeys. She arrived, as I said, when she was five in 1995. So she would have been there a few years when I met her in 1999. And she was in really bad shape when she arrived. She was the victim of horrible neglect. She could hardly stand. She could hardly walk. The hooves on all four of her feet had each overgrown by 11 inches or more. So they were curled underneath her so far that they were hitting the backs of her legs. She literally couldn't stand. And it took all of her strength to try and remain upright. Her hair was missing in huge patches, and she was teeming with lice. She had been rescued from a private home where she had been confined to a 10 by 15 foot paddock, apparently her entire life up to that point, day after day after day. For 5 years, she lived like this without proper shelter, without proper drainage to keep her area clean, and so she was found knee deep in mud and manure, which is why her hooves were curling into her legs. They were never trimmed. Now, a lot of people ask me how wild donkeys fare never having their hooves trimmed. Why don't they have overgrown hooves? And the answer is, in a natural environment where donkeys would be walking on, you know, typically rough terrain, their hooves stay naturally trimmed. Same with goats, same with any hooved animal. But in a domestic situation where they're kept, and well, I mean, whether they're exercised or not, and whether they're kept in mud and manure or not, they need to have their hooves trimmed, just like horses, because the hooves will grow and grow. And that's what happened with her. And so the vet who looked at her when she arrived determined that indeed her hooves had never been trimmed. All 4 feet had severe and painful hoof rot. And as they trimmed away the excess hoof material, Bonnie just endured it without complaint. She knew who her saviors were, and x-rays showed that the bones in all 4 of her feet were rotated and severely deformed. And experts said she would not live long, and they suggested she be euthanized. They said she would never really be able to stand or walk, and that her quality of life was going to be so diminished that you should euthanize her now. 15 years later... At 20 years old, she died, surrounded by the humans and other animals who loved her, including and especially her boyfriend, Waylon, who was another one of my donkey babies' boyfriend. He was amazing. He was a much taller burro. He was beautiful gray and black burro. Donkeys come in all shapes, sizes, colors, and coat textures. The most common coat color is gray, followed by brown, then black. Waylon was a gray donkey with the quintessential black cross across his back. And you can see photos of me and Bonnie and me and Waylon and me and Sierra all at joyfulvegan.com on today's post, the post for this episode. Waylon, oh, I have so many pictures. I might just have to include a link to my Google Photos album of me and donkeys because I just have so many photos of them. Waylon was absolutely beautiful. He arrived at Farm Sanctuary in 1993, even before Bonnie. He was one of the oldest residents at Farm Sanctuary. He was relinquished by a family who accused him of biting kids. He was attacking the dog or something like that. And it turned out that the kids were tormenting him, which is why he was upset and tried to defend himself. But happy ending. He found a home at Farm Sanctuary. He remained there for 23 years. When Bonnie arrived in 1995, he fell in love with her and they remained inseparable until Bonnie's death in 2013. It was very sad for him. Very sad for all of us when Bonnie died. And not long after she did, a little blessing came to Farm Sanctuary. A little spunky, adorable, tiny donkey. Not tiny. I mean, he wasn't like tiny. He wasn't like the size of my thumb. But he was a little miniature donkey named Albert. And he bonded immediately with Waylon. He is the cutest thing. He's still at Acton, the farm sanctuary in Acton. He bonded immediately with Waylon, and they remained together, inseparable, until Waylon's death just a couple years ago, not long after he moved to Acton. Memories, just memories. So I talked about the quiet, meditative nature of donkeys, and it's all true, but they are also incredibly strong and protective and sometimes fiercely territorial. You do not want to mess with a donkey. They protect themselves with their hooves and can kick with any one of them. And Lord, they can bite. Biting is how, it's one of the ways they fight each other. And I would never want to be a donkey getting in a scrap with another donkey. I've seen it in person. It's scary. It's fierce. But as with everything, it's our perception that shapes the truth of things. For instance, donkeys have a reputation for being stubborn. As I said, stubborn ass, right? Stubborn jackass. But let's reframe this from the perspective and understanding of the donkey. Calling them stubborn is a gross misinterpretation of their highly developed sense of self-preservation. It's difficult to force them. It's difficult to frighten a donkey into doing something he sees as contrary to his own best interest, such as going along a path with unsafe footing. That seems pretty smart to me. So let's reframe that stubbornness as intelligence, right? Instead of calling it stupidity or stubbornness, let's reframe it to cautiousness and independence and intelligence. Even the fierceness I was talking about, any of us would be fierce as we're fighting for the things we're protecting. So instead of mean, let's reframe that to protective. Those are the kinds of words for all of us and for any animal that I think is just so much more accurate. It's just too easy to say someone's stupid, someone's mean, someone's dumb. Like, it's just lazy. I just said that, but I'm not calling any particular individual lazy. It's lazy if we just use that. So let's call it what it is. It's protective, it's intelligent, it's cautious, et cetera, right? I want to read an excerpt from an essay written by Mark Myers. He's the founder of the Peaceful Valley Donkey Rescue in Texas. This essay is called The Plight of the American Donkey. And here's an excerpt. The wild donkeys of America tell as accurate an account of our own history as any book on the matter. They were brought here as low-level workers. By carrying equipment and pulling carts, these sure-footed animals made themselves invaluable to explorers and miners. As times changed and money grew scarce, many donkeys were released into the wild to fend for themselves. The deserts of Arizona, Nevada, and California were the perfect home for these rugged animals who managed to keep their breed strong and healthy for nearly a century. Now, human intervention is taking its toll. Although dams, roads, fences, pollution, and even power plants are acceptable inconveniences on nature, donkeys are viewed as an immediate threat to the environment. As a water-drinking mammal, the competition with domestic cattle has resulted in their numbers being dramatically reduced. Of course, we've talked a lot on this podcast about how the private cattle industry gets to run roughshod. And yes, that's an etymology if you listen to that episode. Runs roughshod on public lands. And I'll return to the plight of the American burro in a bit. But Mark goes on to tell about what it's like to spend time with donkeys. And I wanted to share that with you. So he goes on. With a lifespan of 40 plus years, he's in no hurry to give up his secrets. He wants to tell you, but only if you have the patience to listen. And he tells you with his eyes. Aggression, fear, love, and hate are all reflected in those large brown orbs. I have learned to step off the world when I'm with them. I figure that it will keep spinning a while without me. My donkeys need someone who can give them undivided attention. Like any sensitive creature, a donkey wants you to know what he has been through. He needs to tell you that he was never given a kind word or touch, that he was left all alone with no one to talk to. But he will only tell you on his terms, in his way, and only if you're willing to listen. Donkeys are by far the most mistreated farm animal in America. The abuse and neglect inflicted on these animals range from overgrown hooves, which you would have already heard about, to savage beatings. And when the owner can no longer tolerate the beast that he has created, he simply ships the donkey off to slaughter. As I ponder my purpose for writing this article, I think over the many donkeys I've known and rescued. I think about all the stories they have told me and all of the hardships they've had to overcome. I recall the countless hours I've spent talking to them and looking into their eyes. I remember the success stories, the ones who live in new homes, and I look out over the ones who are still here. And I want to tell the world, shame on you for not knowing, and maybe shame on you for not caring. But that wasn't why I needed to write this. I really think I wrote this to remind myself that the sacrifice is and always will be more than worth it. I love that. And it's so heartfelt. And it was in the original episode and I decided to keep it in because it's timeless. So before telling you more about burros, I want to thank you, everyone who supports this podcast, all of you who are patrons. This is the 17th year of the Food for Thought podcast, and I'm so grateful to all of you who've made it possible and continue to make it possible. Thank you, as always, to benefactors David Cabrera and Alexander Gray, to angels Brooke Bussard, Michal Stone, Gina Streiler, and Carrie Parker. Thank you to my heroes, Simon Small, Angelica Lofton, Jennifer Statmiller, Jennifer Watkins, Geraldine Hilmar, PJ Schuster, Denise Hoskins, did you hear that? Denise Hoskins, and Duranjini Mohan, Tina Strassheim, and Liz D. If you too value this podcast and you'd like to join our Patreon family, please go to joyfulvegan.com. Just click on the donate button. You can make a one-time contribution, but you can join our Patreon family, for instance. Different levels have different perks, and we have a perk where we have our own private Q&A with me once a month, and one is coming up this month. So if you'd like to join that, and if you just want to make this podcast possible for everyone who listens, you can go to joyfulvegan.com and click on donate. Thanks, everyone. So more about the amazingness of burros, of donkeys. Wild burros can tolerate a water loss as much as 30% of their body weight and replenish it in only 5 minutes of drinking. Humans require medical attention if 10% of body weight is lost to dehydration, and we require a full day of intermittent drinking to replenish this loss. Another reason to admire the donkey. They grow to an average of 350 pounds, may live as long as 25 years in the wild. A male donkey is called a jack. Right now you can see how jackass happened, related to the Latin name, and jack meaning male. A female is called a jenny. A mule is what you get when you cross a jack, a male burro, and a female horse. So that's when you get a mule. Male donkey, female horse. Male donkey, female horse. The flip side of that is a hinny, which is the offspring of a male horse and a female donkey. Yeah. In short, donkeys originate from Africa, mostly Sudan, Egypt, Libya. Spanish explorers and missionaries brought the first donkeys to the New World in the 16th century, But they weren't used until, as Mark mentioned in his essay, the miners and gold prospectors of the 1800s realized their strong backs could be used to carry tools and supplies and ore. They were also favored over other beasts of burden, quote unquote, because of their sociable disposition and fondness for human companionship. Donkeys were led without ropes. They simply followed behind their people. With the introduction of the steam train, these donkeys lost their jobs, and many were turned loose into the American deserts. This happens a lot in countries where they're still used as beasts of burden, or as pack animals, as agricultural animals. When the animals are too weak or old or useless, they're turned out on the side of the road. Donkeys, as I said, live 40 years. 40 years. Upwards 40 years. Average 25, 30 years. But the point is, lots of people realize if they can't keep taking care of them, they just turn them out. You see this all over. You see this in Ireland. In Ireland, where exists one of the most beautiful donkey sanctuaries in the world, in County Cork, it's fittingly called the Donkey Sanctuary. It's affiliated with the Donkey Sanctuary in the UK, and it's the same there. There's just, if there's no place for them to go, they're just turned out. And donkeys in Ireland would have been kept on farms, used in transportation, but as the country modernized, as people stopped being able to take care of them, the animals were turned out, and it's a huge problem. Highly recommend visiting the Donkey Sanctuary if you have the opportunity. It's enchanting. I want to go back. But back to the US, the descendants of those donkeys who were abandoned by or who ran from the miners are still in the Western and Southwestern United States. And they're supposed to be protected by the Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act of 1971. Since that year, however, more than 250,000 horses and burros have been ousted from the land in order to make room for an ever burgeoning cattle industry. And this is so important to talk about because we just need to talk about their link to the animal agriculture industry. Donkeys, along with horses, are considered a nuisance, and all of them are accused of taking up land and consuming resources that private ranchers use for their cattle. So let me just give you some numbers, and these are the updated numbers I mentioned to you in the beginning of the episode. Private cattle outnumber wild horses and burros at least 50 to 1 on public lands. I'm just going to keep saying private cattle, public lands, wild animals on public lands, private cattle. The Bureau of Land Management, that's the BLM, their private livestock grazing program encompasses 155 million acres of public lands, and it costs over $130 million to manage annually. According to them, these are all numbers from the BLM, from the fiscal year 2022, the appropriation for BLM management of wild horses and burros was $137.1 million. And these are tax dollars. Over 4 million head of private cattle enjoy subsidized grazing on these public lands. When you add up pasture land and cropland used to produce feed, cattle dominate over 40% of land in the contiguous U.S., period. That's a lot. And so if you want to get into those numbers a little bit more, a congressionally mandated study by the National Academy of Sciences found that in 1 year, livestock consumed 70% of grazing resources on public lands, while wild horses and burros consumed less than 5%. Obviously, the cattle industry is favored in the U.S. policy when it comes to wild space for horses and burros versus cattle. Private industry versus wild animals who are, you know, our taxpayers are paying to support wildlife, and yet it's being actually used to subsidize a private industry. And we're going to talk more about this when we get into more horse issues, but experts overwhelmingly assert that the primary cause of the degradation in rangeland resources and damaged riparian areas is poorly managed domestic livestock grazing. and that wild horse removals have not demonstrably improved range conditions, and that wild horse behavior patterns actually make them less damaging than cattle to vulnerable range area, and that wild horse removals are occurring in some locations not being damaged by widespread overgrazing. So again, we're just talking about policies that favor a private industry because of it's just history. It's just long standing history in the United States government. The expansion of the West and the cattle industry go hand in hand. And there's more to say about that. Now, I'm talking right now mostly about horses here, but it's relevant to burros. The act, the 1971 act, as I said, refers both to wild horses and wild burros. And they're all being removed, despite the protection that says they're supposed to receive, despite the policy that says they're supposed to receive our protection, they don't. The 1971 Act says that Congress finds and declares that wild, free-roaming horses and burros are living symbols of the historic and pioneer spirit of the West. But those are empty words because of what we're doing. Today, 86,000 free-roaming horses live on nearly 28 million acres of public lands across 10 Western U.S. states, and 55,000 taken off the land now live in government-run quarters in pens. And this is according to a 2021 must-read article from the National Geographic. I'll include it at joyfulvegan.com. And when I say taken off the land and government-run quarters, the pens that I refer to, I'm referring to the Bureau of Land Management, the BLM, rounding up these free animals, these wild animals, animals who are terrified during these roundups that involve using helicopters to frighten the animals to go into these pens. They're traumatized. Families are separated. It's a horrific ordeal for these social sentient animals, and it happens on a continuous basis. According to the BLM, in 2021, 13,666 wild horses and burros were removed. In 2022, 20,193 were removed, increased from 13,666 to 20,193. And this costs American taxpayers over $100 million every year. Now, if you look at the BLM's website and their euphemistic language for this program, it makes it seem like thousands of animals, these animals are being gathered. Gathered is a word that's used euphemistically. And then they're adopted, which also is a euphemism because it's not always what you expect that word to mean. Now, some animal sanctuaries have taken these animals and adopted them properly. And in fact, the animals I mentioned earlier, Sierra, the donkey I mentioned earlier, who became a friend before he died, he and Thunder and Quartz, who were all at Farm Sanctuary at one point, they all came from the BLM. They've died since, but they at least were adopted and they were at Farm Sanctuary. And I've been to many other sanctuaries where animals have been adopted through the BLM program, but not enough. And there have been so many loopholes in the adoption program, the quote unquote adoption program, where there was a time when so many were being slaughtered because they were being bought by ranchers and then slaughtered, that it's just such an ongoing huge issue. And we're going to talk more about this, as I said, in the horses episode when we get into that a little bit more. But, you know, it's true. Wild horses and burros have no natural predators and their huge herd sizes. They double like every 4 years. And you can see it went from 13,000 to 20,000. And removing them is not solving any problem. What we really need to do, to be honest, is bring the natural predators back. But of course, the natural predators would also be a threat to the cattle. And so the ranching industry doesn't want this. You know, you would have a natural ecosystem if you had wolves and if you had, you know, mountain lions and the predators that are there in the areas we're talking about, you know, keeping the population down of the horses and the burros. But it's just this crazy cycle, this unnecessary cycle that is, as I said, favoring the livestock industry, and our public tax dollars are paying for it. And we need to realize that if we say we care about wild animals and we're eating animals, if we're eating cattle, we're really harming wild animals. We're basically paying for wild animals to be shot and trapped and poisoned and bludgeoned. So that we can continue our habit. I mean, that's just one of the things that moved me when I was looking into these issues many years ago. So that's just one connection between burros and the animal ag industry. Another connection is that burros are very protective of herd animals like cattle and sheep. And so they're used by ranchers a lot to protect their herds from predators, right? So again, you know, the issue isn't, you know, I'm not opposed to this in the sense that I am in favor of non-lethal methods used by ranchers to fend off attacks from carnivores like wolves, right? I don't want those wolves to be shot. And yet, I'm not in favor of breeding and keeping and killing cattle for human consumption. So if the animal agriculture industry didn't exist, you know, wishful thinking, this wouldn't be necessary. So you've got burros used in the animal ag industry for that reason as well. And I don't know what happens to them after they're old and they can't do their job anymore. I'm thinking they're not just adopted into that ranching family. Very unlikely. So this is one of the reasons why Farm Sanctuary's California shelter had donkeys and the New York shelter didn't, for instance. The climate, the terrain, the agriculture industry is very different in New York than it is in California. And the West is where cattle ranching dominates. So burros, they're originally from Africa, as I said, and they are acclimated to the hot, dry environments of California, Nevada, and southwestern states. So that's why you just didn't see a lot of burros, or you don't see a lot of burros in the East Coast. They are just more conducive to dry, hot weather. I just have to say this again. This is just an update. There was a time when I think Farm Sanctuary's New York location didn't have any donkeys at all because they didn't get them from animal ag-related situations like California shelter did. But when the Northern California sanctuary closed, Farm Sanctuary, I believe some of the donkeys did go to New York, and I think others went to the Acton Sanctuary in Southern California. That's my understanding, just hashtag accuracy. Now, this episode is called The Burden of Burros, as I mentioned, and I hope you're not feeling too weighed down by these stories, but it is the burden of burros. I mean, this is why they're considered, I mean, they are literally considered beasts of burden, and this is why. And we do use them in many ways. The vast majority of donkeys used around the world are used for some type of work. And they have been used for 6,000 years. Transporting carts, pulling carts. They're also used for farm tillage, for threshing, for raising water, for milling, and for other agriculture-related jobs. Of course, donkeys are also kept for their milk. Some people drink donkey milk, and some are raised and killed so humans can eat them. I know it's a bit foreign to many of us who don't eat equines. For those of us in the United States, for instance, or those of us from, you know, this particular part of the United States, but there are parts of, you know, North America where people eat donkeys, and in other places around the world, people eat donkeys as well as horses. And because humans like to own things, by the middle of the 20th century, donkeys began to be bred and kept as pets in the United States and in other wealthier nations. And of course, we like to mess with animals to suit our purposes, so we started breeding miniature donkeys. They became very popular. They are cute, not going to lie, but this is, you know, from, I don't think it's from the best place, because it's just to create more animals that we want to own and consume. Now, historically, their burden has also been as pack animals in wartime. And of course, that means they've been victims of war. You might remember the podcast episode I did called Animal Monuments and Memorials, in which I talked about the beautiful Animal War Memorial in Hyde Park in London. It was unveiled in November 2004 on the 90th anniversary of the start of World War I. And I recommend listening to that episode if you haven't, and definitely visiting the memorial if you can. All manner of animals used in combat are honored here: camels and horses, pigeons, goats, and donkeys. It's a beautiful sight. It's a beautiful sight, and I'm really grateful it's there. I've been there a few times. And there are many ways we memorialize and honor animals around the world for the suffering we've caused them. So that's a positive. Of course, I know it means that there was a negative, that we have to commemorate the ways we've harmed them, but it is a positive way we honor them. But it's not just through statues and monuments. It's also through art. That means statues, that could mean paintings, it could mean drawings, it could mean music. It could mean stories, could mean books, and it could mean film. And over the years, I know you've heard me talk about animal-related films in general, and some of my favorite films in particular, including a film called O Hazard Balthazar, which means like Balthazar at random, kind of, that's kind of a loose translation, by French director Robert Bresson. And Robert Bresson was considered one of the few spiritual filmmakers, and there is a real spiritual, there's a real spirituality in the story that's told in Balthazar. And Bresson was very concerned with the inner workings of the human mind and the human heart, as he was with the use of images to convey these things. And in many ways, his films could easily be silent pictures, just images, because images, more than words, illustrate the stories he tells. And though I love many of his films, he has some beautiful films, it's Balthazar that is his most startlingly beautiful and heartbreaking and one of my favorite films, one of my top 10 films of all time. And I'm cautious of overselling it because I know I get enthusiastic about things that I get enthusiastic about, but it's quite incredible. The film follows Marie, who's a farm girl, and her beloved donkey Balthazar. And as Marie grows up, the pair become separated, and the film traces both of their fates as they continue to live a parallel existence, continually taking abuse of all forms from the people they encounter. She's exploited by men, he's exploited by humans, and depending on whose hands he falls into, he's used as a pack animal, he's put in the circus, he's used to generate power for a mill, he's tied up and he's made to walk in circles. He's whipped when he tries to stop and lie down. He's used to carry weapons and contraband by the same criminals who violate Marie. I won't tell you it's not a sad film. It's a very sad film. And though it is a bleak comment about the potential for humans to be brutal and unkind, it is so breathtakingly beautiful that for me it's worth every tear. You might remember the story I told when we first discovered this film. David and I belong to a film society called the Pacific Film Archive in Berkeley, and we feel so lucky to live so close to an amazing institution that plays films you'll never see anywhere else. A lot of people ask me where I see the films we talk about and films I talk about. Film festivals and film societies is definitely one way. So check out, you know, there might be a film society and films and film festivals that come to your area near you. And we are members. And it's one of the things that's great about it is if you just go with an open mind and you don't know what's playing and you don't know what the retrospective is or what have you, this is where you discover films. And we didn't know anything about Bresson. I don't believe we had seen anything by Bresson at that point. I'm 100% sure now that I say this. And so So Bresson, as I mentioned, he lived from 1901 to 1999, lived for a long time. And we hadn't seen any of his films. And I remember the night we were going to see the film, I didn't want to go. I was really tired. I had had a really long day and I just wanted to stay in my pajamas. And David, to convince me, just said, "It's about a donkey." And I was like, "Okay, I'm going." So we went. And I know this might not enamor you to the film. I know this might not get you to see the film, but it was definitely one of the most emotional experiences I've had in a theater, for sure. That movie, another movie called Ponette, about a little girl who was orphaned, and a movie called Kolya, about a little boy who was orphaned in Russia. Ponette was French, and Balthazar is French. I'm tearing up saying it. There's something about vulnerable human beings and beings, just beings who are vulnerable because they're alone, because they're abandoned, because they don't understand why. And there's this vulnerability in Balthazar that is just heartrending. It's just heartrending. And so throughout the film, it wasn't just the end. I mean, throughout the film, I was barely able to contain my sobs. It was a 95-minute long film. And it was one of those situations where, you know, where you're crying and like you can't catch your breath. Like, so it's vocal crying, like an ugly crying. And that was me. My sleeves were drenched. And we were in the front row. I remember being in the front row because the place was packed. So, and then we got into the car and I was still crying. So I don't know if that makes you want to see it, probably doesn't, but let me just talk about the film a little bit. The last scene of the film is one of the most unforgettable moments for me in cinematic history. It's incredibly powerful, and especially with Schubert's Piano Sonata No. 20, I still can't hear this piece without crying and without thinking of Balthazar. Yeah, it's such a beautiful piece. And this movie just epitomizes our treatment of animals. Just it became the movie and the character I think of as a representative of violence, like just a representative of animals who are victims of violence. Balthazar became that symbol for me. And it's also very powerful because it creates a beautiful parallel between, as I said, the dynamic between those who are given power in this world, those who take power, and those who are made powerless. So it'd be men over women, as in the case in the movie. It could be, you know, white people over people of color, wealthy people over poor, human over non-human. This idea of this power dynamic, it's very clear in this film. And when I think about the loneliness and the fear and the sadness and that phenomenon of vulnerability and loss and not understanding why that non-human animals experience, those who are in research laboratories, those who have chains on their feet and they're kept as circus animals, those who are bred to live in cages and crates their whole lives until they're killed for their fur or for their flesh. When I think of these animals, I think of Balthazar. The last image of Balthazar, which I won't spoil here, but it distills everything we do to animals. And it just breaks my heart. Now I know I've persuaded you to see the film. Sure. It's just beautiful, and I really hope you watch it. And I want to tell you before we close about another film about a donkey inspired by Bresson's Balthazar. And it's a new film. I know that someday this is going to be dated, but it is a new film called E.O., and it was made in 2022 by 85-year-old Polish director Jerzy Skolimowski and co-written and co-produced by Ewa Piaskowska. It follows the life of a donkey born in a circus and who performs with a young woman named Cassandra who loves E.O., and she's loved back by E.O. And at the circus, there's an anti-circus demonstration by animal activists. Law enforcement officers arrive, and the two are forced to separate. E.O. ends up in a stable and later changes owners. There's no other way to say it. They're not guardians. They are owners several times, all the while flashing back to when he was most happy and most safe. And throughout the film and throughout his travels, he travels from Poland to Italy, he encounters both compassionate humans as well as nefarious humans. And we see the world in all its turmoil and all its wonder through his big, beautiful brown eyes. The donkey, Io, is portrayed by six donkeys. So the single donkey in the movie is portrayed by six donkeys: Ettore, Ola, Marietta, Mela, Rocco, and Taco, T-A-K-O. And I know that because the film premiered in competition at the Cannes Film Festival in May of 2022, where it won the jury prize, and Skolimowski's acceptance speech was just him thanking his donkeys. That was it. Take a listen.
Le prix du jury est attribué à I.O. Jerzy Skolimowski.
I would like to thank my donkeys. All six of them. Taco.
Ola.
Marietta. Ettore, Rocco, and Mela. Thank you, my donkeys. Io!
It's funny because when you watch the award ceremony, the audience doesn't quite know what to make of what he's saying. I think they're embarrassed. Some people seem embarrassed for him and some just think it's funny. Some just think he's making a joke, and then some realize, well, no. He loves these donkeys. And it's such a powerful film. It's one that is worth several viewings, to be honest. We were lucky enough to see EO with some friends, some very dear friends. Hi, Philip. I know you're listening. Philip's also a supporter and very dear friend. And thank you, Philip, for your support. And Philip is newly engaged to my dear friend and hero, Camilla Fox, who's the founder of Project Coyote, who you've heard me interview on this podcast. So the four of us went to go see EO at a screening in San Francisco that both Jerzy Skolimowski and Iva Piaskowska attended and answered questions at the end. And oh my gosh, did Skolimowski, mostly he did most of the talking, have some powerful things to say about our use and abuse of other animals, and that we urgently need to change our treatment of them, and we need to stop or reduce our consumption of them. And he talked about, folks, he talked about how his experience was changed through the making of this film, and how the experience of many of the crew members and the cast was changed, and their perspective was changed through the making of this film. This is what I have been talking about for years. When I talk about individuals using their art form, just being who they are in this world, exploring the same questions and struggles and challenges and considering our, you know, relationship with other animals in their own lives and in their own work. And here it comes out in a movie. And he changed the ending of the movie as they were making it. So I'm so glad we got to see him in person talking about this, but you can find a lot more online. There are some beautiful interviews with him and with Ava online. But Camilla pressed record as he was asked. So the interviewer was asking him about the ending. He had just talked about reducing your consumption of animal products and animal flesh, or at least cutting down. And we led this applause many times in the audience after he said this in a few different ways. So he was talking about the ending, and he had said this about consuming fewer animals. And this was already something he was clearly kind of winding down, but getting even more emphatic about this theme of the film. And he finished and we applaud, and then he stops the interviewer from talking and says, just one more sentence. And so I want to play this clip for you because Camilla filmed it and I was able to extract the audio. The volume isn't great. It's a little low, and he has a very strong Polish accent, but I want you to hear it in his voice, and then I'll repeat for you what he says after you hear it in his own words, because it's quite moving.
Such a barbarian human activities like what so-called industrial farming. You probably heard about the conditions in which those animals spend their entire life, if you can name it, if you can call it a life. It's not life, it's just a barbarian treatment of the voiceless helpless living
you can hear my sigh. You can hear my just... after he says what he says. So he says, we're all responsible for such barbarian activities like so-called industrial farming. You've probably heard of the conditions in which those animals spend their entire lives. If you can name it, if you can call it a life, it's not life. It's just barbarian treatment of the voiceless, helpless living creatures, although they are our brothers. That's what I wanted to add. That's what he says. And like with Balthazar, the end is gutting. In a different way, with Balthazar, you can clearly see the parallels between the powerful and the powerless. I mentioned the men, women, human, non-human dynamic. And in EO, there's a lot more commentary about the killing and consumption of animals, as I'm alluding to with these clips. And while the ending of both films is gutting, the end of EO is so clearly an indictment against the consumption of animals. Even if you don't think about donkeys as being eaten, they are. But that's not necessarily the point he's making. He's making the point that our arrogance and our anthropocentrism is what causes so much animal suffering. They're all at our mercy. And you can see that in the parallels between the ending of Balthazar, where he's surrounded by sheep, also victims of animal agriculture. Though, as I said in the beginning, there are definitely Christian overtones in Balthazar's character and his suffering. And in the ending, Bresson would have said as much, that Balthazar was a Christ-like figure. But you see the parallels between Balthazar surrounded by sheep at the end and Io surrounded by cattle. And in the last heartrending moments of both films, Balthazar and Io and the sheep and the cattle personify innocence. They personify vulnerability and powerlessness and defenselessness in the face of human culpability and cruelty and complicity. And I'm so grateful for this film and its message, and I dedicate this episode to Jerzy Skolimowski and to Robert Bresson and to filmmakers across the ages and around the world who've used their art form as a platform to talk about our deep relationship with and our need to be compassionate to other animals. I do my work because of Balthazar and EO and the billions of animals who endure so much at the hands of humans. When I look into the eyes of Burroughs, I'm lucky to call my friends. I know they've seen the dark side. I know they have stories to tell. And so that they will be remembered and so that their lives and their suffering will not be in vain, I am here to tell their stories. And we can all do the same, whether that story be that of Balthazar or EO or an animal you've met or whose story you've read, tell their story. Each species, each individual needs ambassadors who represent them and voices who speak for them. And I'm proud to be their ambassador, and I'm grateful to you for being the same to me. It's the very least we can do. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you want to connect more in a personal way while experiencing some of the wonder that the world has to offer, check out joyfulvegantrips.com for our trips to Italy. I can't promise you that you're going to meet the Sardinian donkeys in EO, but you will meet animals in both Italy and in France. Those are our trips in 2023. And when you go to joyfulvegantrips.com, you can get your free Joyful Vegan travel guide. You can also join me in my online vegan cooking classes, where you can get recipes and the rest of my work at joyfulvegan.com. For the animals, for Balthazar, for EO, this is Colleen Patrick-Gaudreau. Thanks for listening.